We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey.
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf here on the We Made This podcast network. My name is Mark Adams and I am your host for this episode. And with me at this time is my co-host, Kurt North. Hello, Kurt.
Hello.
And we are being joined for the first time in this series by Matt Latham. Hello, Matt.
Hi. Hello. Welcome.
Now, Matt. Okay. I need to speak to you.
Okay.
I've spoken to Carl and to Colin.
He has. He's been quite strict.
And I need to speak to you about everyone's behaviour on that Christmas special.
Okay.
I'm really concerned. And for me, is my thing was not doing due diligence on the hosting for a special guest that you had on. So we need to talk about that off air.
Okay.
So I need to have serious words and there will be consequences.
Hey, if you want to give me, if you just want to tell me about that bonus you're going to give me for finding him, it's fine.
I don't think there's any bonus in it at all. It was certainly an interesting, I wouldn't say pleasure. I don't know what to call it. If I was being honest,
a load of fun.
It was certainly interesting on Christmas Day when I was listening to it.
So, and, you know, people have subsequently listened to episodes that were released after it, so it hasn't done us too much damage. And no one's kind of like said anything mean on Twitter. So maybe they liked it. Who knows?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, when the actual host doesn't have a backup question, that's when things start to go downhill.
That was a bit naff.
Anyway, we're not here. That was moons ago. That was moons ago.
It was.
Hey, don't worry. Next Christmas special. Next Christmas, it's Bullseye. How fun.
How the fuck are we going to do Bullseye?
I can work a way out. Oh, I can work it out. It'll be all right. Well, that's if I'm there.
Well, how likely is that, dear? Anyway, we're like doing series 6 because you're here, and we're doing series 6, episode 5, Rimmerworld, which was broadcast for the first time on the 4th of November, 1993. And yes, this was one you requested, Matt. Was there any particular reason?
Part of it is because it meant that I got to get onto Out of Time.
That was the reason. Fine.
Yeah. Now, ask me that question again when we do episode 2 of season 10.
I think I know what you're talking about on that particular episode that you might want to be on.
Episode 1, yeah.
Yes.
But also, I think I'm quite a big Rimmer fan, and I always find Rimmer-centric episodes interesting, dependent on their quality, and this and the next episode, and I don't really want to go into something that is more relevant for next episode, but particularly these two episodes, the character of Rimmer, I'm trying not to derail and start talking about Out of Time, because this is a conversation I think is more suited for that episode that we're going to be recording, quote unquote, next week.
Well, the cat's out in the bag on that one, mate. Everyone knows you record two in one night.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say, quote unquote, next week, just to, you know, kayfabe, you know.
Kayfabe is dead.
But with this, I think we're getting to a point in the show where there's going to be interesting things that happen with the character of Rimmer. And this is probably the last traditional Rimmer centric episode that would air for about 20 years.
Right. So it's just your obsession with Rimmer, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, know that as well. But I think there's, but also I think particularly, I don't know, I was going to ask the two of you, what's the consensus been about Series 6 so far? Because again, people on the Iron Curtain, I've not listened to the first 4 episodes you've done, and I'm not sure what the general opinion of Series 6 is. So what was the gauge of it so far?
Well, I've gushed and struggled to say anything bad about it. But okay. Other people have been a little bit more balanced, but not really.
Okay. Because I think on the rewatch, it's very similar to series 4 in that I think it's better than series 4, but series six kind of goes into a couple of traps, I think, to its detriment. And one of the big things I think is that it sometimes has a habit of repeating ideas or concepts that it's done in the past. And one of the big things I wanted to think about Real World is that I never realized it until I watched Terraform, but there's a lot of crossover
with
Terraform. Mm. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to get to this part of Series 6 is I wanted to gauge your opinions on whether we got to a point in the show at this point where perhaps they were, I don't want to say running out of ideas, but they were perhaps struggling to come up with.
One of the things that we did say about Red Dwarf 6 is that, just for your knowledge, Matt, is that towards the end of Red Dwarf 5, they were commissioned to Red Dwarf 6.
Mm-hmm.
And BBC were really pushing for it to be released in the March or the April of that year, which was brought a hell of a lot way forward to do it. So Doug and Rob both bought a house or rented a house together near Shepperton Studios just to continually write the season. Mm-hmm. They were actually, I mean, this, I think it's been one of these episodes, I think in both probably actually thinking about it, you'll see Crichton reading off a video printer quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of close-ups of him really, really looking at the screen, looking off screen, and the shot. You can physically see the shot move from like the wide angle to a side-on view of Crichton because he's reading a lot of the stuff because they hadn't even given the script. So there's a lot of that going on, which we've talked about the kind of continuation in the show. So you've got the things like what we're going to talk about here with the simulant ship going back to it. And this was actually filmed third before Gunman of the Apocalypse. So this was filmed before. And we have touched upon likes of like sirens, you know, the polymorph kind of aspect to it. We have touched upon a couple of things where it does feel a little bit like it's not necessarily copying, but there's definitely themes in there.
I think even Gunman of the Apocalypse, which, you know, I won't have a bad word said about it, they frankly use Better Than Life. It is a Better Than Life system that they use. They don't say those words, but it's the same equipment, mm-hmm. or it might as well be. And I just feel that you're right. Yes, there aren't very many new ideas, but I feel like without exception, actually, no, with the exception of Rimmerworld, they are done better. Whereas, spoilers, I thought this was a bit shit, actually, and I was surprised because I remember Series 6 being superb across the board.
Mm-hmm.
The only episode, having watched all six now, that I was disappointed with was actually Rimmerworld.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons, I think, as well. I think I mentioned Series 4. I think Series 4, the memory of Series 4 was better than perhaps it would have been. I think there are elements of Series 6, I think, that are there as well. But I think Series 6 as a whole, I mean, considering, I think, like I said, with the production things as well, is that I still think Series 6 feels like it holds together slightly stronger despite of that.
Mm.
Despite of that, and particularly in terms of production and stuff. And I think a lot of that is that I think with earlier seasons, I mean, I still think Series 2 is still my number one series, I think, of all time. Then I think it's 5. Then perhaps either 3 or 6. I can't figure it out.
You're ruining the special, Matt. You're ruining the special.
Right.
We're going to do a special on this, Matt.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
You need to read our minds better next time, mate. Fuck's sake.
Oh, sorry. I've been busy. But I think with Series 6, I think Series 6 feels more like a science fiction show with funny bits in it. Whereas I think there are some series feels like it's a comedy show with sci-fi elements. So Series 6 jumps into slight formula in that, oh, there's a joke about his head, there's the space book called directives, there's a lot of metaphor jokes gone through, there's always some kind of cat analogy that goes on slightly too long, and it kind of feels like the guy, like a checkbox of have we had this yet?
See, that's interesting. That is really interesting because I, this afternoon, was thinking how the sci-fi element didn't make too much of a thing here in this season. And I was thinking Rimmerworld is probably the closest. I mean, and I'm talking specifically about the wormhole bit,
mm-hmm.
you know, the time dilation stuff. And apart from, yes, you know, you've got the VR headsets and stuff like that, but it doesn't do a Future Echoes. It doesn't do a Backwards. You know, it doesn't do anything sci-fi. So it was interesting that I was thinking that myself today, actually.
Yeah. In that case, I think it feels slightly more like an American sitcom in terms of that it feels like it's you got the story and concepts and the pitching lines. And so it's not a case of like you've got a room of like 10 writers pitching jokes and breaking stories. You've got two people. It's condensed to two who are crafting these in, but it feels like they've got a science fiction story and they're crafting the jokes into it, whereas sometimes you've got whereas previous ones, you've got a comedic premise with the science fiction put in. And I think that's what's different with Six, I think. But again, I think perhaps with what you said with the kind of tight turnaround, they probably didn't have as much time as they usually had to craft
and
the story.
Do you want to know what the irony was?
What?
It got put back to autumn, where it was meant to be.
Well, yeah, this was broadcast in November. So, it was just sat there for months after they'd rushed like that. I just imagine I'd be so, so cross. I would be so cross.
Can you imagine, like, all of the thing, they were rushing through it, they said, you know, and we talked about this in Series 5, that there was issues with Series 5 and how that worked and things, but you rush it through, you're literally getting scripts to them before it happens, you know, right before filming, and then the BBC turn around and say, actually, you know what, we're going to put it back to the autumn, so, you know, you don't need to worry too much about it, and it's like, oh, never mind.
Done it then.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have had Gunman the Apocalypse, Mark, had that happened, because
I know, right?
Obviously, Janet Street Porter, or whatever her name is, would have kiboshed it, because she would have heard about it by then, so...
And Gunman of the Apocalypse is the greatest episode of Red Dwarf, bar none, ever. Do you want to do your thingy?
I've told
thingy?
You it isn't. I've told you it isn't.
Whatever. Do you want to do your thingy about the Laredo thingy?
I can do the Laredo thingy, as we have been doing every single week for Series 6. We are just raising awareness for the Laredo Western Town set, which is based in Kent, which unfortunately was set alight at the end of November. Last year, that's in 2021. So they're currently raising money to try and rebuild it. It's a site that was imagined in 1971, and the family still own that, and with a bunch of friends. And their goal is to get £25,000 to rebuild the set. I think, as Colin said the other week, that it was also the set which was filmed for Grounds of Divorce by Elbow. I watched that video actually recently, and it's like, I don't quite get why they went there, because they literally just used a small room and that's it. So I don't quite know why they went to that set, but never mind. But yeah, they're trying to raise 25,000. At time of recording, or last week anyway, they were around 15,500. So they've still got another 10,000 to go. So if you do have any spare change, please donate what you can, as it's, you know, it's a bit of Red Dwarf history. So, yeah, there's my little bit for this week.
Yeah, and the reality is, I think I said this last week as well, is we've never had a Patreon or a Ko-fi or anything like that. And honestly, we're probably not likely to. Our network does, but we don't. So if you do want to, if you ever have wanted to, you know, drop us a few quid, buy us a coffee or whatever, chuck it that way. They'll do better with it. We'd probably spend it on sweets, to be honest with you.
Yeah, at least they can buy some nails and some hammers and pay some joiners to get that work done. So, absolutely.
Okay, so Rimworld. It starts with Crichton in Medbay checking up on Rimmer. The results are not good. It's uncommon, but it's actually possible for a hologram to die from stress-related complications. Rimmer needs to keep calm and relax, or he will die in hologrammatic form. Crichton gives him some Chinese worry balls and suggests he uses them under situations of great stress. Rimmer asks Crichton not to tell the others. This was funny, but I'm not sure I'm down with the hologrammatical retcon.
I'm wondering whether this is them beginning to think, shit, Chris Barry is an immortal. He's not gonna be young forever. I wonder if it's them writing into the fact that Chris Barry is going to age, and think that this is them writing it in.
Just smacks of, we wanted to write this episode, but it doesn't work with the way he's currently in law. So let's just back on it. And I get why they were on a tight as fuck schedule, but it just doesn't quite sit well with me. What do you think, Kurt?
I like the concept taken out of context. I like the idea. You know, without spoiling Star Trek Picard too much, there's a similar thing that happens in Star Trek Picard, but it would have been interesting because that was kind of the opposite issue. But I like the concept of it, and just the very thought of, like, you know, if you could say put yourself into a hologrammatic body and you're the person, but you've got all those ailments in the first place, then it doesn't make you immortal. So that would be intriguing in itself, that dilemma of, like, you might buy yourself some extra time or whatever, but the thing's still going to get you in the end. But it is a bit strange that you would put something like that in, and as you say, it does seem to, for me, I don't think it's as thoughtful as what Matt maybe alluded to. I think it's more the case of they've gone, well, this is going to be quite interesting, we'll put it in.
Yeah, and that concept I just said will get pretty much this episode and the next episode puts a massive kibosh on continuity. And unfortunately, Mark, we are going to have to talk about continuity areas because there's a massive big one. There's a big one in terms of Rimmer.
Oh, yeah. Moving from Series 6 to Series 7, I was like, what the actual fuck when I watched Chica to Ride, but we'll talk about that next time. And the introduction of the light bee felt like it was something that could have been there from the start but not mentioned, whereas this just didn't feel like anything other than we need a plot device.
And to probably give peril for Rimmer as well, but
yeah.
Again, the whole thing of possible them to die, I don't know whether it's just like a case that Rimmer would give himself a heart attack out of stress, which will shut down the light bee or something, because in Legion, and again, this episode and Out of Time, there are elements to the hard light mode. And I don't know how much you've delved into the discussion of the hard light mode. You probably had a big chat about it in Legion, but I've always had the impression that physically, he's perhaps one of the strong, is now quite physically strong, as in, like, almost impervious to stuff. Like, he can't actually be damaged.
Well, he can't take the Ionian nerve grip. But there's no such thing as the Ionian nerve grip, so we're all right. Without spoiling too much, and Matt will know what I'm testing to here, I think there's a couple of things they do in later series which kind of probably work better.
Yeah.
They work a lot better than that. And I know that the Promised Land has an element to Rimmer as well, which is interesting.
I've got the Promised Land in my notes, yeah.
Yeah, so, so it's interesting how they've kind of like used this. It's interesting you say also, I keep saying interesting. I need to stop that.
That is interesting.
Fascinating. It's fascinating.
Curious.
Legion, the Legion thing makes him that impervious. So it's almost like, oh, crap. We need to, like, stop that. We need to almost, like, turn about, do a U-turn. Which, you know, we won't go into too many U-turns because, you know, won't get into
that. I suppose that does make sense for the fortune of Rimmer, in as much as every time he gets a shiny thing, it eventually gets taken away from him. Every time he thinks he's got something good, it gets fucked over. So that kind of, yeah, okay, that I'm convinced, sort of.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. But it at least makes sense.
I quite like the idea that there's also a kind of like a psychosomatic thing happening where it's, I don't know the exact language, but where like the stuff like the panic attack wouldn't actually happen to the hologram and it would not actually affect him. But because he is Rimmer and it seems to be an exact copy of his brain and how he works, I'm assuming that all the emotions and, again, I don't know how the brain works properly, but I'm assuming if it's exact copy of his brain, then all the kind of anxieties or health anxieties that can probably come to that. I mean, like, if people get chest pains when they get anxious and, like, start sweating and stuff. And I think we've seen in the past, actually, that he faints when Queeg makes him run and stuff. And, again, I'm wondering whether that is just like a habit of how he knows he's human. It's like it's how people kind of write around the fact that sometimes, hang on, Spike, Drew, Angel from Buffy, they're all breathing. You can see them breathing, whereas they don't need to. I'm just wondering whether it's like them writing around that, okay, they kind of knew it's an impulse. It's a natural impulse that he's never lost and stuff. And I think that kind of stays with the person so that Rimmer kind of feels pain, but it's all psychosomatic because he's never known anything than not being human.
But you've just basically come up with a better concept now than the writers did at the time, Matt, because that was not made explicit.
I know it's going to be a complete left field, but I don't know why I've just suddenly thought this, and there is elements to the reason why. But I'm really now fancy just like breaking off from this podcast and watching Black Mirror and the Ashley 2 episode.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen that.
I've not seen that, actually,
Oh, it's excellent, Matt. Get it watched, mate.
Yeah.
I still need to finish series 2, actually. Why Rabbit broke me.
Yeah. I mean, I was really cynical about it because, frankly, it had got what's her face in it, that singer.
Miley Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus, yeah.
And she smashed it and it was excellent and I'm an idiot. So it is a great episode. And it is kind of related to this, but I'm going to move on. The other thing I wanted to talk about in this scene was the progression of Crichton's lying. We've seen over the last six series how he couldn't lie. He was learning to lie. He had to explicitly say lie mode before he started to lie. Whereas here, he only has to cancel it. He can now lie. And what's really frustrating is that's a really nice progression compared to this shitty retcon in the same fucking scene.
No, I agree, actually. Yeah, there's the sense of the progression of Crichton where it's either that or they just realise that they can't just keep repeating him going lie mode all the time where... Like, they have to kind of say, yeah, we need to kind of get him to actually lie or just or conceal the truth or break things gently. But then again, though, how much is his feelings towards Rimmer? Because he's not as partial to Rimmer as he is with, perhaps, Lister.
Yeah, maybe he still has to go lie mode if he wants to lie to Lister, which would kind of defeat the object, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, even that would find it a lot more difficult to lie to him. So,
yeah.
But then again, and here's a question as well. I mean, his relationship with the cat. I'm trying to think of an example, but I can't think of one.
Yeah, they aren't close, but he doesn't dislike him like he pretends he doesn't dislike Rimmer. I think you're right. There is almost three very different relationships where he likes Lister. He indifferences the cat and he doesn't like Rimmer, but he's polite to all three of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my question then, seeing that we are talking about, issues, which way would you choose? What would you actually choose? Would you want the harsh reality of the situation? Or would you like it? Would you like to engage Limeworld?
Fuck.
That's deep, man. Sorry.
I'd probably react in exactly the same way as Rimmer did. Say that you don't want to know, and then change your fucking mind. I think that's exactly what I'd do.
I think, you go, I don't want to know, but then realise that, shit, I need to know because not knowing is going to be...
I would agree. I think that's... I would probably just go, like, just give it to me. Just let me know what it is so I can deal with it.
Yeah.
Well, interesting line from Crichton is that he says, spend more time in your hard light form. See, I didn't realise that he could switch between the two. I mean, does he switch between the two?
Well, they established earlier on in the series that it's a bit of a power drain, and so sometimes they have him in soft light form when he doesn't need to be touching things. So I would assume...
Okay.
Does Rimmer sleep? Does Rimmer have to sleep? Because if he had to sleep, you'd probably put him in soft light, wouldn't you?
Well, he's had a bunk for six season series, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
And he gets up at 4 a.m. and does his star jumps and stuff.
Yes, he does. He does sleep. So maybe he'd be in soft light form for sleeping. Yeah. The Starbug approaches the simulant ship they recently defeated. They decide to loot it for food. Crichton and Rimmer try to convince them otherwise. Cat and Lister are desperate as they've only been eating space nettles and lichen for weeks. When the cat's out of the way, Lister confides in them that the reserve fuel tank is also damaged and that they're nearly out of fuel and that he rigged the readouts. Rimmer has a panic attack and he uses his Chinese worry balls. I like Chinese worry balls. I have a set of Chinese worry balls. They're no good for when you're worried, but they're kind of just nice to just chill and just, mm-hmm. just do your hand and keep yourself dexterous.
And yeah. sing songs to the labyrinth.
Yes. Do that with the labyrinth. Oh, David Bowie in Labyrinth. You two need to talk for 5 minutes while I have a good think about that.
My name is David Bowie.
Yep.
I can't help do that now. I've got to do Flight of the Conchords because it's just embedded in my brain. David Bowie. Sorry.
The elephant in the scene is that this makes literally fuck all sense. If they are chasing after Red Dwarf, they will be going in one direction and you won't come across something that you've already sped away from.
But don't they say in this episode, is it this one where they actually say that they've lost the trail anyway?
I think that's out of time.
Is that out of time?
Yeah.
It literally makes no sense. And apparently this was going to be the next episode, and they loot the ship straight away after escaping the fireball that they kind of landed in. But for some reason, they wanted to put something else in between, and that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I agree with
you. They actually say, sorry, Matt, they actually say in the tongue-tied thing that these three episodes back-to-back give you a time frame, and it's the first time in the show where it's actually really tight, like a tight time frame, like matter of days or weeks, whereas in the rest, you never really know how many weeks each of the episodes are, and these three are quite tight.
It's particularly implied in series one and two that they have weeks and weeks on end where fuck all happens because endless space. Mm-hmm. And is it just more populated around here? I don't know. You know, they've come into contact with lots and lots of things. Whereas they had series and series where they were all just sat on Red Dwarf. You know, it just, I don't know. This episode just highlighted the continuity errors to the point that I've never seen it before. And I'd be lying if I said it didn't grate a little bit.
I think, I think it's true as well, particularly when there's there's a kind of serialized element to six, like a mini arc. I think, as fun as it is to say, oh my God, they're revisiting the simulants that they met a couple of episodes ago, and particularly in hindsight with the narrative sophistication that has happened since then in basically most genres of TV. And it's quite nice for them to kind of feel like episodes are building on each other as much as they could do in 1993. But I agree with you. I think it's kind of like, they're supposed to be going in the same direction. And I never thought of it that way before.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I take a bit of a... issue, but I'm not entirely convinced the way that Rimmer has his panic attacks. Personally, it grates on me a little bit the way he does it. Having said that, grind those balls is probably my quotable dwarf on this episode. Grind those balls.
Must not make gay joke. You'll tell me off. Must not make gay joke.
I just think there's the two or three times that he does the actual panic attacks themselves. I don't know. I don't know if it's just too cartoony. It's too over exaggerated.
It is quite campy, isn't it?
Yeah.
That I do struggle with. But then obviously when we do actually get to Rimmer World and we find him and he's twiddling the little ones, then you know that's the joke. So
I think it's built into the payoff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Without wishing to be too personal, I have suffered panic attacks in the past, and they ain't like that. I'm not offended by it. I don't think that there's anything to pick up there and call it ick or anything, but they're just not like that. If you have a panic attack, you're knackered for hours afterwards, and it's much more physical and, frankly, a lot more scary than it's depicted on that.
I do think panic attacks can differ from people to people. I mean, I come to realise that perhaps had them and not realised that they're there and that they're actually panic attacks and stuff. So, and I think if you put into mind that this is Arnold Rimmer, who would probably try and milk it for as much as he possibly can, then...
Yeah, I suppose I could see that.
Yeah. I think that if he thinks like even a slight twinge, you'll probably think that he's dying. So I think that perhaps the added melodrama might be just in character. It is campy, and I think that is slightly campy and overdone, which is, I think, how Chris Barry does it. But then Chris Barry's quite a physical performer when he needs to be. But I could see that actually happening with Rimmer because it's Rimmer, and just perhaps over-egging it a bit.
But it doesn't make sense because he literally said he wants to hide it from the others and then he's overly campy with it.
Oh, this is an interesting discussion.
Do you not think?
Yeah, then I again, can see what you're saying.
Then
yeah,
again, no. I can see Rimmer saying that, but then subconsciously slightly wanting the attention. Because then perhaps in getting setting, like kind of manipulating people into position, saying what's wrong with you, and then saying that, and then trying to get sympathy from the others.
I think he gets some satisfaction from people caring enough to ask, actually, now you've said
it.
That's much more subtle than I think I'd spotted. Yeah, all right, I'll buy that for a dollar.
Well, I'll buy that, considering that a lot of people on Facebook put something on where it's like gutted or distraught, and then it's like, what's wrong, babe?
UK, hun.
Yeah.
You're okay. You know, I've always like been on the verge of actually doing that at some point just to see what the reaction would be and say, no, nothing. I just felt like seeing what people would say.
Oh, hun.
Rimmer would totally just put them on just to get people to react and then just get really pissed off that no one's reacting.
Yeah.
And then goes, why does no one ever like comment on my Facebook profiles? Because everyone's put you to hide, everyone's muted you, that's why.
Well, you would fucking mute Rimmer, wouldn't you? You
definitely
would. He'll be one of those who put like these really long kind of rants about things. Like, I spend like for hours getting no one will care about them.
Oh, don't. I've still got people that actually do that on my Facebook feed. I'm like, what are you doing? You're 5 years out of date and you're not interesting.
My head's going through things there. The cat would definitely be using in Pinterest. The cat would definitely be searching for clothes.
The cat
on Pinterest.
Would be using Tinder.
Pinterest and Tinder.
This is an odd conversation.
What would Crichton be doing? What would Crichton be on?
LinkedIn, probably.
LinkedIn, looking for like sort of new more work, looking for more ironing jobs.
Yeah.
He'd be on Fiverr.com, wouldn't he? He'd be looking for jobs. Do your ironing.
He probably just plugged himself into the internet, and like there's probably loads of other androids just there, like. And LinkedIn going like, I also ironed three shirts the other day.
He'd still be on like message boards talking about androids, wouldn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, he would.
He'd be on old school message boards. Nice. Discord as well.
Yeah, and I think Lister will still have a Nokia 3210 and just not bother.
Yeah, he would.
Either that or just going on Instagram and just following a load of models.
He might be on Guitar.
Right, I'm going to move on.
Just giving all his, you know, because we talked about all his guitars last week. So,
jeez. Mr.
Anyway,
guitar.
Moving on. Yes, moving on.
They board the simulant ship with guns and scanners. Lister then tells them that they can't actually use the bazookoids as a loud noise would blow up the ship. Rimmer has another panic attack. They find a teleporter and use it to load supplies. Have we had teleport? Yes, we have had teleporters before. Why haven't they got a teleporter on Red Dwarf?
Have they used teleporters before?
No, they've been using...
They teleported to Waxworld, didn't they?
I can't remember.
Did they?
Yeah,
did
they teleported...
Did they just land Starbuck?
No, they teleported to Waxworld. That's how they escaped the prison, with the teleporter.
They've got
But if the technology's there, why would a gigantic ship like Red Dwarf not have one?
I wonder if it's because of the growing popularity of the Next Generation. Because when they started, it was, what, 80... Was the Next Generation?
88.
88. So, Next Generation's 89.
87 was 89.
Next Generation was 87.
do you think they probably might not have been able to watch it properly when they started to do it? So perhaps the concept of the teleporter or the transporter perhaps wasn't a big thing in the minds of Grant Naylor at the time. And then perhaps as the popularity of The Next Generation grew in the UK and the concept of teleportation. I mean, I don't really know much about the older Doctor Who's, but Mark, I know you know a lot more about the Doctor Who episodes. Was teleportation a big thing in the original Doctor Who?
Not at all.
No.
Almost not in any way.
I'm inclined to think that perhaps it's because of the growing popularity of The Next Generation and the whole transporter thing, is that perhaps they started incorporating teleportation or the teleport machine into Red Dwarf, but they just that as a sci-fi concept just wasn't well known enough for them to even think about putting it in.
I don't know, because I mean the whole reason why transportation devices on Star Trek was done in the first place is because they didn't have enough money in 1963 to have a ship land on a planet. That's why you've got a lot of the new shows now, especially Star Trek Prodigy, because it's an animation that their ship lands on the planet, and Voyager, it was the first starship that actually landed on a planet. And then you look at like Star Trek 09, the Enterprise was actually on the shipyards on Earth, not above Earth. So that was the whole reason for teleportation. So transportation's been a thing since the early 60s.
Maybe it's just not a concept that they like. And they just
Maybe they just tried to avoid it because it's got the, and ironically, Patrick Stewart saw Gunman, but maybe it's just that they've tried to avoid it or use it sparingly, and they've got to the point now where it's like, well, we can just write that in, maybe.
I just don't feel like they ever needed to worry about a sitcom being tropey of the situation that they'd put their characters in. So it just seems like an odd choice.
And there is a debate to have next week about that as well, about the teleportation stuff, because there's something that happens in next week's episode, but we'll talk about that next week.
The female simulant staggers in as they're doing their final run, and funnily enough, she's quite cross. Lister calls a stalemate and calls her a babe, asking her what she's doing tonight. She says she's dying and starts shooting the ceiling. And what... Whilst it was funny, flirting with a simulant,
I find that, I thought it was a really, really good scene.
I found it funny, but I'd be fucking petrified. They've established the simulants as absolutely devastatingly frightening killing machines with zero emotion. So it just seems a bit odd that they do anything other than be petrified.
Have you met Kachansky? Oh,
fuck's sake. Maybe I'm trying to make it too serious. Maybe I've been watching too much serious sci-fi.
You cannot be serious, Mark. You cannot be serious.
Okay.
I can't believe you'd be in serious.
Very good. You did well there. That was a nice reference. That was smooth. shall I explain it? Rimmer sneaks behind her with a bazookoid. But he's really cowardly and he goes for the escape pods instead of saving them. And that's where Lister says all that shit that you just quoted really, really well and like quite wittily and sharply. Well done. And it creates a blast that takes out the simulants, but also starts the shipquake that Lister had been talking about earlier. And back to the teleporter, easy escape that Crichton, Lister and the cat use the teleporter to escape.
This is perfectly in character for Rimmer. Now, again, I don't want to go too much into future episodes, but, and this is one of the key things I want to start mentioning about with his character development. Considering what happens later on, in that he has 600, so that he ends up on his own for 600 years. This could theoretically be the show reminding us that this is a kind of like a cowardly sack of slime who will not do anything selfless to try and save anyone else in his life. Very imminent future episodes, there's like considerable growth. So I'm wondering if this, it probably isn't, I'm probably reading too much into it like I usually am, but I'm wondering whether this is just like a case of Okay, we need to remind people just how slimy, how cowardly that Rimmer can be. So when we get to a bit later on, when what happens in the next episode happens, it feels earned.
And true. I was just curious. I'd agree with that.
I think this has become a turning point for Rimmer as a character in the context of the show. I'm just curious to see whether if you think this is them trying to remind us of like the worst parts of Rimmer in terms of his lack of loyalty, so to speak.
No, I think you're probably bang on the money there, to be honest with you. And this is a consistency of Rimmer, is that even though he grows to like the people that he's now friends with rather than just dumped on, his cowardliness, unless he's being Ace, is always, always there. The teleporter doesn't work very well, and they end up porting back in time. And they talk to their former selves, revealing that they do enter the sim ship and that Rimmer uses the escape pod. And I'm like, that makes no sense. Why are they surprised that he then uses the escape pod? There's so much lazy writing in this episode. And it just feels to me like this was the one that they cobbled together in the quickest time because they were under pressure.
Also, it violates a lot of the rules of time they mentioned in Future Echoes, where in terms of like the future happens. But then again, that's going to be something we'll talk about in Series 7, isn't it, as well? Because there's a whole thing about causality, I think. Is causality in Red Dwarf, in that what happens, happens, and you can't really do much to change it? And there are elements, particularly in Lister's backstory, which I'm not going to get into right now, in terms of like fixed points in time, fixed points in time and that sort of stuff.
I mean, it was the original birth of the Millennium Group, but that's a different TV show.
Should start a podcast about that.
Called The Time Is Now, I think. Yeah. But that's for a much later episode.
Yeah. But then Future Echoes are saying what happens, happens, and you can't change it. And here, like, yeah, they pretty much create a time paradox straight away. And it's, it's either a mixture of a gag that doesn't hit, or they added that scene to plod out the script so that they can use it at the end of the episode to set up the cliffhanger at the end of the episode for Out of Time. So I'm just wondering whether that's just there just for that, but yeah, it doesn't really make much sense except to establish that the teleporter can time travel.
But it goes again to that concept of Series 6 having these things that are kind of repeating on themselves, isn't it? Because Out of Time, teleport, you know, this episode, the siren stuff, you know, with Polymorph and all that kind of thing. It seems like it's all distilled into like this one series, and it's like the greatest hits.
Yeah.
Kind of like run, really. It's almost like the final lap.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't get anything after this for 3 years, so.
Honestly, as I was watching this and as I was spotting the continuity wonkiness, I think it might actually be this episode that has given Red Dwarf its reputation, because it's much less frequent than I thought it was across other episodes in Red Dwarf. But in
Legion's probably the biggest one, really, isn't it?
Legion's bad, but this is worse. There's just every 2 minutes, there's something that contradicts something from a previous episode.
I'm quite interested to hear. I'm looking forward to this Legion episode then.
I didn't shit on Legion like I'm shitting on this.
It's just the appendix. Just the appendix stuff, that's all. It wasn't anything other than that. But that's the thing everyone remembers. If I think continuity for Red Dwarf, the first thing I think of is Lister's appendix.
Right.
Which is not a nice thing to think about, really. But it's... but you know what I mean? It's like...
Everyone has their thinker. No judgment here.
So they escape in Starbug in the nick of time, and they discuss Rimmer and his illness. Rimmer comes up on the comms and claims that his plan worked and that it was deliberate, and asks them to rescue him. Unfortunately, the pod is faster than them, and it's headed to a planet that's a year and a half away.
Which is the exact set of the simulant on Gunman the Apocalypse, which a lot of people have made comments about.
Huh.
It looks identical. They didn't even change anything. They just like had a closer shot. So when you see the simulants in the previous episode, it's quite a wider shot. This one's just them. He's just almost sitting further forward.
That's just budget, isn't it?
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Which I don't blame him for, you know. No. It works. It's fine.
I'll be honest, I didn't notice that. So, I mean, I'm not particularly observant as a human, but I didn't notice it. So it can't be that bad. Maybe.
Supposedly, it was from a fan point of view. It actually was something that people actually made comment on. So it might be in this magazine, potentially. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not so au fait with this magazines. Maybe I should listen to some podcasts about them.
They are genuinely worth reading. They're a lot of fun. And they're also quite a kind of historical reference point for the show that I found most fascinating about reading the Smegazines. Anyway, we're not talking about Smegazines. Rimmer's course is corrected by the pod, and it takes him through a wormhole that means instead of a year and a half, he's going to be waiting 600 years. That is a really good gag. I've slagged off this episode a lot, and Rimmer's going from shit to shitter is always going to be funny, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I do quite like how Crichton explains how long. Because think of that war, the Second World War. How longer than that? The 100 Years War? Yeah, and they take that number and times it by six. 600 years.
It's brilliant.
Grind those balls, sir.
I think the scene, again, is made so much better by the acting ability of Robert Llewellyn and Chris Barry. The delivery, considering they hadn't had a script for more than 2 minutes, the delivery is magnificent from both of them in this scene, and it does make it so much better.
No, and I also really like the science aspect of it as well, actually using time dilation. You know, without really explaining it too much, there's enough there that you can understand that. You know, obviously, the relative time that this is going to go through, that Rimmer's going to go through compared to the gap that Starbuggers, before they get there, is really good. I do actually like that concept and the fact that they've used it to give a story, which if you think about it, as I say, it's like 600 years. So, you know, there's a lot of years gone on in this series, because I think it was 300 to 400 years or something, wasn't it, at the beginning? The first episode, where he's been in stasis, where Lys has been in stasis for like 600 years. So this is another 600 years on top of that. So.
It's not going to be me, but someone could do the maths of exactly how long they've kind of skipped years and stuff because of stasis and wormholes and stuff. I'm not doing it, though. I'd like to know the results, but if someone does want to do that or someone has done that, let us know and, you know, I'll retweet you or something. You know.
I mean, to be fair... 3 million years into the future that there already are, and so what, another 600 years in the general concept of Red Dwarf isn't going to make any difference.
It's a drop in the ocean, you're right.
It's nothing. It's all relative.
The pod has terraforming abilities, and Rimmer starts a log as he lands. He's on a desert planet and uses the pod to accelerate the ecosystem. It creates a lush and verdant world that he immediately decides to call Rimmer World. He wants his own Eve, as he's on his own, so he kind of tries to create his own Garden of Eden, but he calls her Jane, and that's a very good gag. The idea that the Bible has become so irrelevant that he's getting it confused with Tarzan and Jane is a really deep-cut, nasty, anti-religious gag that you wouldn't spot unless you're like me, and it's really clever. And he's
well
brilliant.
Done, Mark. What? Well done.
Oh, yeah.
Did you not clock that? He doesn't refer to her as Eve. He refers to her as Jane. And so it's basically saying it's...
I'd assume because his middle name, his middle thing was Jay. But
no. But he talks about the Garden of Eden, but refers to the person in it as Jane. It's a deliberate malaprop, like in the past when they've had Wilfred Shakespeare. It's a deliberate thing about the passage of time, meaning that people's knowledge of history is warped and that the Bible is fucking irrelevant. And that's so naughty because you won't always spot it. I love that gag. It's mean.
I did not spot that at all.
Yeah.
But to be fair, the rest of that line, though, I do quite like the timing of Chris Barry's expression In like, I was like, technically, she would be my sister, and therefore unable to take me as a lover. After much soul searching, I decided, what the hell? I just wouldn't tell her. And it's just, it's Chris Barry's expression where he goes, savage. Where he just starts smiling and goes, hmm. It's almost like that.
Savage.
He goes almost British. He goes almost near British in terms of that smile. And it's funny because it doesn't, it's less the smarmy smile. It's more the kind, he's a lot more Gordon British in terms of what you expect from him. But it's just that, I just think it's, the timing is great.
The sister gag, it's another dig at the Bible. In Exodus, Eve is made from Adam's rib. And you're absolutely right. He fucks his sister. It's his biological clone that he's fucking. So it's either a clone or a sister. It's subtle, but mean as fuck. And
then again, though, Mark, you have said that you would sleep with yourself.
Oh, I absolutely would. And he'd be really good. Oh, I'm thinking about
it. Mark would actually make a mark.
Yeah. I wouldn't want a woman.
What would I
do with a woman?
It would have to be all clones.
Oh, that'd be great. Imagine the orgies.
Literally all clones, wouldn't it? Oh. There's no propagation.
Adam's world.
And they're all just shagging. They don't
Adam
get on with anything.
Adam and Mark.
But they don't get on with anything because they're all just shagging. Because, you know, they know that they're going to have great sex every time.
You can imagine like sort of just watching Adam and Mark grow together, right? So you've got Adam and Mark and then they're
sitting
just
in a tree.
You know, you're just going, you know, as a gay man.
Well, like... yeah, we'd just be shaggy. We wouldn't even bother to say that. We'd know. Talking about gayness, Chris Barry's bottom is pleasant.
It's not him, I don't think.
Well, that man's bottom was pleasant. I'm a little bit disappointed it wasn't Chris Barry's bottom. We discussed Craig Charles's bottom when he was in Captain Butler the other month. But I wanted to get the full collection of bottoms by the end of this podcast. I want to see all four bottoms. I'll be very disappointed if I don't. And this means I've still not seen Chris Barry's bottom. How do you know it wasn't Chris Barry's bottom?
Have you seen the shape of the guy?
Why did they use Chris Barry on a green screen? Maybe he didn't
cheaper.
Want to get out his bottom.
It's all cheaper.
They went to town with the fucking egg. The egg was pretty cool, actually. Really nice prop.
It was a double screen, wasn't it? Wasn't Chris Barry in the screen
the
thing as well? In the scene?
Yeah.
Someone Google whether it was Chris Barry's bottom. Anyway.
So on the trivia page on the Tongue Tied Wiki.
Is it his bottom?
You bet your bottom dollar it is.
Because I read it earlier. And I can't find it, but I definitely saw something that's saying it wasn't actually him.
Fair enough. That's a shame. So my bottom collection is still at one. That's a shame. Anyway, the clone ends up male, which we've spoilt. And then the boys get there and there's thousands of life signs. They land and look around, and they are stopped by numerous rimmers dressed as centurions. They call them mutants, deviants, and Lister asks them to take them to their leader.
How could you, sir?
One of the rimmers says that the Great One will judge them. And I don't do it as often as you care, but the Smegup where Rimmer jumps from behind a tree and goes, "Silence, travesty!" and then howls with laughter. I can't take this scene seriously anymore.
Yeah, I've tried this episode not to mention the ones where I've instantly remembered. So, you know, like, oh, not the bloody heart attacks, stuff like that. I've tried not to mention them because I know it's been a running gag. But yeah, silence, travesty!
It's wonderful.
Very cold. Again, like we said the other week in the Guelph episode, where it was freezing cold. Again, this was another cold, cold day.
Ooh, and there was quite a lot of bare flesh going on.
There was.
Mm-hmm.
So a Rimmer is the Great One and is sat on a throne. The boys from the dwarf appeal to him, but he's organic and therefore cannot be the original Rimmer. They start a trial for their deviancy. But Crichton asks to speak to the hologram Rimmer, and this very much displeases the throne Rimmer, who says that he is the real Rimmer.
I am he!
And they get sentenced to death.
There might be a spoiler alert for what we might be saying at the end of this episode.
But the one thing in this scene that it wasn't quite, but it was a nearly Mark has to pause to get over his laughter moment, was the concubine. Chris Barry's face, being the concubine, trying to look seductive and completely failing, was fucking magnificent.
So the two girls in front were a set of twins.
Right.
Originally. And obviously the kissing was actually, you know, male and female. But the makeup on Chris Barry is just sublime.
It's wonderful.
Unreal. It's brilliant.
It's a nice visual gag, and it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah. But quite interesting, like, that the...
But I do like the fact they use twins, because then you've got, you know, the kind of... the clone kind of aspect to it, you know. So they thought about it that far.
But they're also female. So biologically... I don't want to go too much into how.
Would Mark shag a female version of himself? Is what you're asking, isn't it?
I was on about how.
That has got him. That's got him wondering, though. That's got him wondering.
She could give me a blowy, but I wouldn't want to go anywhere near that thing.
Sorry, Matt. I've overridden what you were going to say. Carry on.
I don't want to have a go with one of them. I had a go once and it didn't go well. Boobs are all right. Downstairs bit. Nah.
Can you imagine it not going well and it looking like you?
So what you're saying is if I shagged my own female clone of me and we had a me child, this is going too far. This is definitely going too far.
You started this journey back in series one.
Well, so. I clearly deserve this, but we're moving on. Fuck me.
Carry on, Matt. I apologise. You were going to say something.
I can't remember now.
All right.
Oh, yeah, it's the... I'm assuming there was space for more clones and then one came out female. I was trying to figure out how they could populate. That's the only question I had.
Well, they certainly wouldn't have developed the technology to be able to do... to change people's gender by... You know, by an operation like they can now, because Rimmer's not that bright. So it's got to be something like what you're suggesting.
Yeah.
They're thrown into a dungeon where they find Rimmer with Chinese worry balls that are the size of peas. That is what you call a payoff, gentlemen.
Yeah.
it's not, I don't find it as funny as the concubine, but I think it's a more sophisticated gag. It's really well done.
It's that long form joke telling, which I've mentioned right through this series. It's the plant stuff right through the show, and I keep going back to it. So,
and Arnold Rimmer, look, I'm just going to say a sentence, and we're not going to talk about it until next week. But Arnold Rimmer, looking not a day older than he did 557 years ago. Anyway, carry on.
And that's a really impressive little escape pod. That's got 557 years of hard light power.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I think partially it's because I really didn't actually quite enjoy this episode that I've managed to find more holes in it than I might have done were I watching Gunman of the Apocalypse. But I do think there are genuinely a lot more holes in this than there are in any of the other episodes in this series. Rimmer's memory is shot. And he's been there for 557 years. He was overthrown 557 years ago, funnily enough. And they punish deviancy of any kind where you're no longer Rimmery. He's only alive because he is indestructible as he's in hard light mode. They look for a way to escape, and Lister comes up with an incredible, elaborate plan, like something out of fucking MacGyver. But Crichton has the teleporter.
One of the best gags in Red Dwarf history.
It's a great gag.
Yeah.
Just love the fact that he just went, oh, we could use a teleporter. And it's like, oh, my God. There's another one in Out of Time that's just, it's prime Red Dwarf for me, which we'll talk about next week. But those moments of Crichton is, I think, what makes Crichton for me my favourite character. And I think, I didn't realise this at the time, but I think Series 6 is the prime Crichton for me, like when you get moments like this. Yet there's a lot of decent stuff in the coming series, but stuff like that, you know, stuff where it's just like the most common and easy and simple, logical thing to do. And, you know, we go around the houses just to get to the joke of actually, well, you know, I've been carrying this thing. You could just use that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always had a soft spot for Rimmer's misremembering of the names. Derek Custer, Kit and Titan. And I've always quite liked how the rest of them just suddenly start picking them up because, well, there ain't no prison that can hold Derek Custer.
I also like the way, even though he's got the names wrong, there's still real and pure happiness in his voice. Titan! And it's delivered in a way that just fits. It's lovely. You're right.
See, again,
lovely.
Going that Boys from the Dwarf kind of thing, where you think about it, it kind of happens in Gunman as well with Crichton when they're in there. So it's kind of like a play on that as well. So it's these kind of jokes are in there.
And that's real character development for Rimmer as well, because he didn't have affection for these three, two or three series ago.
And also, considering that he says that they throw people in prison who don't have anything Rimmer-like, then why was he thrown if he's that? So is this the first steps of him changing or developing to the point that gets him to what he does next week?
That's interesting. Maybe he did stand up to them, which they weren't expecting, something like that. It's not made explicit, but what the problem is, there are female Rimmers, and that isn't Rimmer. So why weren't they put in the prison? Or is the whole idea that there's a hypocrisy there, that because they're a woman, that's the only unrimmerness that they will accept?
Potentially, yeah.
Am I reading too much into a script that they put together really, really quickly and didn't really think about?
Isn't that our job?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. but I get a point, yeah. But I think the kind of main thing is that the episode doesn't put too much attention to is that Rimmer isn't Rimmery enough for Rimmer.
We have been making up some interesting words, including the word Rimmer, in this particular episode of our podcast.
I'm getting partial to the word Rimmery.
Rimmerness, Rimmerliness. It's just brilliant.
I mean, I've always taken it that, again, what we said with what Mark said about the fact that he'll always end up going down the wrong path, that this is like, even in a world of his own likeness, his own Rimmerness, then he still ends up at the bottom of the pile as Rimmer. Rimmer still ends up at the bottom, no matter how hard he tries. He's got his own hierarchy, he's got his own kingdom, and he still ends up being the peasant in the dungeon.
But then, I can't remember exactly what happens in Terraform, but that's when he's tied up, isn't he? Yeah, that's his different aspects made flesh, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. So there's that, but then there's also Me Squared, where the concept of him having to deal with himself, he's at the point where he knows that he can't deal with himself.
Mm.
So it's like revisiting the idea that's been done before, but with perhaps more of a science fiction concept than series one. So I do find it quite interesting that the way he's approached it has changed. So instead of thinking, there's two of us now, he's more a case that I will put my own society, and it just doesn't seem to fit into his own nature, more or less.
But I mean, it's interesting as well, if you take, just flip it and don't even include Rimmer, but you know, the whole idea of diversity in the world makes the world like a rather unique and a rather interesting way of seeing what happens, you know, you know what I mean? So the fact that there is like a world of clones, which is effectively pretty much what it is, that you don't have that diversity. You don't have that initial thing. And you know, there is a world that's actually being developed there, but it's a world that doesn't really work in a real world sense. And it's actually the clones that have kind of like, you know, not been. I'm trying to think of what the best way of trying to say this, but you know, because there's non-diversity there, it actually has an effect on the world as such. And obviously Rimmer, who is used to diversity, it just literally falls to the bottom because he's just, you know, he can't handle that in itself.
Yeah. But on the flip side of that, Throne Rimmer has an H on his head. So even though he's been thrown to the bottom of the pile, there is an acknowledgement that the original Rimmer is the most Rimmery Rimmer, but he's in prison. There are some interesting things to discuss in this episode. And again, I quite like the fact that earlier in the series, they acknowledge that there is a tiny element of DNA in the Light Bee, which is why the Emohawk can take the emotions and make him into Ace. And they continue that, you know, that he uses the DNA from his Light Bee to create these people. And so there is some good stuff in this, and it is quite thought-provoking. I just didn't enjoy it. One thing I will say about this scene is it has my one line of the week, my quotable Red Dwarf, and I say this a lot. Maybe not the whole sentence, but shouldn't we be making skedaddle plans? I definitely use skedaddle plans. Do you want to make skedaddle plans? I definitely say that. I honestly, how do people not notice that I am a walking Red Dwarf quote machine? It seems like everything I fucking say.
Well, because Mark, you didn't realise you were a walking Red Dwarf quote machine.
Boo.
Oh, actually, saying that, I think I completely missed my quotable draws. Dwarf as well, and it's a cat line, which is sadly quite rare, but it's the goes like,
it's not rare for me.
All in all, 100% successful trip, but sir, we've lost Mr. Rimmer. All in all, a 100% successful trip.
That is a line. So they end up teleporting to what they think is the past, and Cat and Lister reveal what Rimmer has been through. It backfires as it's actually their future selves, and Rimmer reveals that something terrible has happened to Lister.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
Do you think that they're referring to the brain in Out of Time, or do you think they're referring to something else?
I'm trying to remember if it's revealed when what happens to him happens.
Because I don't know. The reason I ask is I don't know, and I haven't decided what I think.
I assume so, personally.
I would probably assume so as well.
Yeah.
So for me, I think of all the episodes we've watched, so what's 6 times 6, 36 episodes, this is the one that I've been disappointed by the most. I don't think it's the worst, but I do think it's because it's in series 6 that I was so disappointed by it. Do either of you have any final thoughts on the episode or anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to talk about?
I don't personally. I would agree it's the weakest episode of the series.
Yeah.
As in series 6 or...
As in series 6, yeah. I think... What was the... we'll talk about our best and worst episodes of the BBC running the special, I think. Mm. Disappointed? I'm not too sure I'd say disappointed. There is, I think for me, some of the Rimmer stuff, which is ironic compared to Matt, that in some ways, some of the Rimmer stuff over the course of all 6 series, I've often thought as a little bit weaker because I was looking at something differently. I know, Matt, I know. But having said that, on the Shipwrecked and Comatose podcast, that I've come to respect it a lot more. But the Rimmer, the problem I think I have for the Rimmer stuff is...
Not Rimmery enough.
I really, really struggle to know which episode is which. Which is why, the Terraform... If you would like to take a step back and think about Red Dwarf as a whole, I couldn't tell you. I think he even started with this early doors about the Westworld one, the Rimmerworld one, this one. I could never work out in my head which one was which. I just knew that happened there and this happened there, and I could never collate them all of them in my head. So that's almost like a preconception that I knew that this one wouldn't be my favourite. And I wouldn't say skip because I would never skip Red Dwarf, but I'd say this is definitely my least favourite for Series 6.
I think, as I mentioned in earlier, at the start of the episode, I think with Series 6 is that I think conceptually the sci-fi stories are interesting, but I don't think they're applied as well as previous episodes. But I think the kind of moments of comedy, although the lines of some of the dialogue are some of the more memorable moments or memorable lines, even if sometimes they kind of sink into the kind of like, oh, this week we've got another, it's the Crichton joke of the week, it's the head shape joke of the week, it's the cat quote of the week, it's the space core of the week.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, because you think about, you mentioned the cat quote, you know, the one where it says, we've lost Mr. Rimmer. That joke gets repeated time and time and time again.
Yeah.
In various different forms. The Crichton head, like shaped like an oddly shaped ice cube or whatever it may well be in 1 week, will get repeated in, you know, seasons 11, seasons 4, seasons 5. So there's a lot of like things like that that happen. And I think I agree with you that there isn't like in these episodes, there isn't like a queeg. You know, there isn't like a full thing and you're getting that switch and it's like, ah, you know. You know, you're getting moments like the bulb. You know, you get stuff like that happening. And it's those memorable moments that you remember. I mean, Gunman the Apocalypse, as you know, is like, as we've mentioned earlier, Mark, you know, whether or not it's like Back to Reality or whatever it may well be, as episodes, that's probably the best episode of the series. But, you know, well, of Series 6 for me, and I know it's for you the best, but I think you're right, Matt, with, I think some of them are gag-related. Now it's more, they're so embedded into culture that they can just use the gag rather than trying to build something. It's like, oh, we can just throw in that joke or we can throw in this element, you know. So there is a little bit of that going on.
Well, gents, like I say, this was disappointing because it was in Series 6. If it was in, say, Series 3 or Series 4, I probably wouldn't have been as scathing as I have. I think you've got to put some perspective into it. I've kind of went into it with rose-tinted glasses, and that's why I was disappointed, I think. I don't think it's a bad episode. I just think it is the worst episode of Series 6 and therefore a disappointment, because I kind of remembered them, wrongly, being consistently exceptional.
So that's maybe Series 4, I think.
Right.
Yeah, because I ended up being slightly more critical of Series 4 than I ever expected it to be.
Mm.
See, isn't that interesting? Because for me, it's not necessarily about the series. I just, an episode would be on. So it would be Rimmerworld. It would be Me Too. You know, it would be Future Echoes. You know, it would be whatever's on Polymorph. It'd be whatever's on in that week. And I think Series 6, strangely enough, is, like I've mentioned over the course of the previous five episodes, a lot of it for me is the smeg-ups more than the actual show.
Yeah, I think particularly growing up and seeing repeats of it on the channels and stuff, I think a lot of the times you kind of group them into the series is because, particularly with this point of the show, they'd have like Red Dwarf 5 or the Red Dwarf 6, and they'd actually have the Roman numeral in the title sequence. So like you're watching, so you'll watch it and you didn't really know which, when I was younger, didn't really have a concept of which episodes and which series. And at the end, like, you'll see the title sequence, you'll have like Red Dwarf V or Red Dwarf VI or IV or something like that. You'd be like, oh, okay, this is that series and stuff. And when she saw that number, I was able to start gauging, oh, that episode's in 6, that episode's in so-and-so. And you start gauging, like, how they were grouped. So I'd be like, so you'd be saying, like, and start to notice, like, oh, yeah, okay, this one looks slightly more polished, so 6 came after. Like, this is how numbers work. 6 comes after 4, doesn't it? So that's how I started getting my head around that. And then, like, I don't think Series 3 doesn't have the 3 on it, I don't think. And then, like, 1 and 2 kind of mixed up with each other, so it didn't really know the difference between the two of them until at least the DVDs, I think. But
for me, it was always completely distinct which series was which, because the vast majority of my consumption was via the videos, the VHSs. And they had the numbers on the spines. So my brother and I, we'd watch Series 6 that night. We'd watch Series 4 another night. And it was consistently Series 6 that we would watch, maybe three times more than anything else.
Thinking about that, you know, I think what's really strange with it is the fact that I think I remember, and I kind of do it now, if I watch Red Dwarf 6, I watch Red Dwarf 6 as a whole, so I don't even think right. about the episodes. I watch it as like six episodes in a row. You know, it's like literally bang, done. Red Dwarf 3, I watch it in a row. And it's only when, like, sort of repeat television came on, it's like, oh, that episode's on. Oh, Polymorph's on. And I genuinely think of it. I don't think of the number that's on the opening credits. I genuinely think Polymorph, you know, or, you know, Out of Time or stuff like that. And that's why I was saying with the Rimmer stuff, that's where I struggle, because I'd never really, the Rimmer episodes never really grasped the name. I never really grasped the names because I don't think I was that, not keen. I don't think keen's the right word. I think it's more a case of they didn't jump out as much as, like, you know, as a you know, Backwoods would, for example. So I don't know. It's weird.
That would be the end of the episode. So Matt, tell everyone where they can find you on the internet, please.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter under X and Matt if you want to find me on Twitter. Also, you can follow my podcast, Pick a Disc, which is where I speak to someone about an album for whatever reason they want to. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or podcast apps under Pick a Disc. I am also now co-running a podcast with Kurt and some guy named Tony about the TV show Yellow Jackets called the No Book Club, which is at the time of airing, going, at the time this airs, I think he's still going across, I think. Kurt might know more than that, me by that.
Go on then, Kurt.
Considering I haven't started to edit these yet,
fair enough.
We shall see where we get.
At the time you listen to this, we'll be on series 3 of Yellow Jackets, so...
hopefully we'll be towards the back end of the first season of Yellow Jackets, I would have thought. I think these are looking to be airing around March, somewhere around there. So we'd be airing 10 episodes, which is 20 weeks. So, yeah, this should still be going strong. So, yeah.
What about you then, Kurt, other than Yellow Jackets, No Book Club stuff?
Twitter is the best place to find me, and you can find me at R. Muldrake. Make It So, the Star Trek Picard podcast, is coming back early March. So that should be well underway by now, and I should be gleeful seeing Sir Patrick Stewart back in the guise of Jean-Luc Picard. So you can find that at Jean... I can't believe I got that wrong then. Jean-Luc Poddard is the Twitter handle. So find me there.
I love that. I love that Twitter handle. The Twitter handle's great.
And Tony came up with it, didn't he? It's like, no.
Oh, God. I'll take it back. I'll take it back. It's cack.
No, it's not great, is it? I've just cacked me pants.
Fucking hell, that's a deep cut quote of the fucking Smegups. Get on with it.
And you can find me on the X-Cast, which is the X-Files podcast. You can find that the X_cast.
If you're looking for me, you can find me as the main host of Right in the Childhood, which is a podcast about kids' TV, at RITCpod on Twitter. You can also find me as the host of Geek Polymath, which is a show where I talk about which is a podcast where I talk about something that I am quite into with someone who is an obsessive fan. That's at Geek Polymath on Twitter. You can also find me as one of the co-hosts of Chucky Vision, a podcast about the Chucky franchise. That's at Chucky Vision on Twitter as well. If you're looking for me, it's at Mark Adams HC on Twitter and Instagram. Don't bother with Instagram. I don't like it, so I very rarely post on it. So, all of the podcasts we've mentioned, you can find them on whatever platform you are currently listening to Shipwrecked and Comatose. Please do give all of our other stuff a go. That would be lovely. Thank you for listening to Shipwrecked and Comatose, and until next time,
I am he!
All in all, 100% successful episode of the podcast.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you've just listened to. We're not going anywhere, but we'd love to keep the lights on for even longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and, well, you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis. And get the ball rolling.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
A Dream Given Form. A Babylon 5 podcast.
The isolationism is talked about a lot in the episode with this entire, but Londo's isolation is so heartbreaking to watch. Their final scene of dialogue together between Londo and Jakar is so powerful. When Jakar says, "I can't forgive this entire, but I can forgive you," and that music as Londo touches Jakar's arm and leaves gives me goosebumps. It's so beautifully done.
I'm not going to lie, that I kind of welled up when Jakar forgave him. It really does.
Yeah,
it really does get me. But yeah, it's a very sad story, but that's what makes Londo's journey such a captivating journey to watch throughout the five seasons.
Free with this month's issue.
This is Skin Lab and Dissolve.
Yep.
That f***ing riff, man.
What a track.
So good.
I love that lyric as well. I'm disappointed that he didn't write it himself.
Did he not?
No.
Which one?
It's not what they call, it's what you answer to, is a W.C. Fields quote. I've just looked it up.
Yeah. Oh, I quite like that even more now.
For a second there, I thought you were going to say it was a WCW quote.
Yeah. Oh, Sting coming out. Yeah. Bit of that Eric Bischoff in the middle of the ring. Let's re-record it. And Ian, if you could just say that, that'd be fantastic.
Sure.
But no, I love this. It's definitely Machine Head influence, isn't it? I mean, they're from San Francisco, so, which isn't a million miles away from the Bay Area, of course. But,
There's a bit of Far Beyond Driven era Pantera in there as well, particularly with the deep, low voice in the verses.
Oh, yeah.
Geek Polymath.
So what is it about RuPaul's Drag Race that particularly appeals to you over everything else that you could possibly like in geek culture?
It's impossible to narrow it down to one thing, because it's literally everything about it is everything that I like. So you've got legitimate competition, because 9 times out of 10, the loser is the one who does the worst. So one of the problems with reality TV is that they keep the controversial people in and they send home the boring people. That's something that happens around it, and it becomes quite disappointing.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.